What's up, Big Screen Sports listeners? If you checked out last week's episode with Brandon Kelly breaking down his top five soccer movies, you'll have heard him talk about Blue Wire's first original podcast, Golden Goal. Brandon's the narrator. The show gives you 10-minute episodes all about soccer legends and the moments that made them. Whether you're just learning about soccer for the first time or a diehard fan, this podcast is a great listen for anyone. The final two episodes are live right now, or you can binge the entire season to learn about your favorite soccer stars. Check out Blue Wire's Golden Goal, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Blue Wire.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. This podcast is brought to you by the Blue Wire Sports Podcasting Network and sponsored by BetOnline.ag and Manscaped. You can pick up a welcome bonus over at BetOnline with promo code BLUEWIRE. And I just want to shout out Manscaped for upping their underwear game. They've gone to the upper echelon of underwear. It's like right up there with the stuff you get from companies, other companies that advertise on podcasts. It's at a cheaper price, and you can use code BIGSCREEN for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. So go do that. Today's episode, couldn't be more excited about today's guest. This year, I discovered the Barton and Bud podcast. It's my new favorite college football podcast. It's hosted by Bud Elliott and today's guest, Barton Simmons from CBS Sports College Football. Since recording, Barton and his wife have welcomed a new baby into their family, so, you know, congrats to them. But before the baby arrived, Barton took the time to record a great episode about a movie that is, you know, pretty important to him, which you'll hear. It's The Program. There's a lot to unpack in this one. It came out in 1993. It has strangely aged both, like, kind of poorly, but also really well in some areas. Barton was the perfect guest for it. We had a lot of fun, a lot to unpack. Hope everyone enjoys this one. Want to do a quick shout out to user Elvez for the 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And folks, we're a couple more ratings away from 200 5-star ratings. So if you enjoy this episode, you know, make that happen. Help me out. 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also join the Facebook group, the Big Screen Sports Facebook group. Follow on Twitter at @big_screensport or my personal Twitter at Kyle Bandujo. And check out BlueWirePods.com for all the great podcasts in the Blue Wire Network. With that, let's get to this week's episode, one of my favorites I've ever laid down, talking The Program with Barton Simmons. All right, joining me on today's episode of Big Screen Sports, he is the co-host of Barton and Bud, which I can say is my favorite new sports podcast of 2020. He's also a national writer for CBS Sports College Football. Barton Simmons, Barton, thanks so much for joining me today on Big Screen Sports.
Man, I am I'm excited that you asked me to join you. This is a pleasure, an honor. This movie we're about to talk about is like a formative movie in my life. So I'm excited to jump on with you.
I look forward to getting into that. Before we do, tell the folks where they can find Barton and Bud, what you guys have coming up in the next, you know, the next few weeks or so.
Yeah, the Barton and Bud pod, you can find it anywhere you find your podcast. We typically release our shows every Tuesday. I'm having a baby as we're recording this in like 2 days, but I think we're still going to keep on rolling with the pod through the baby. And the Cover 3 podcast is another podcast I'm on. You can check that out as well. And then obviously at 24/7 Sports, both myself and Bud Elliott, you can find all our stuff there as well. So we're talking college football. I know there's some bad news floating around these days, but we're keeping our head down, controlling what we can control, talking a lot of ball as much as we can.
It's been very informative, despite the lack of college football, the uncertainty around college football. You guys are one of my favorite listens. Everyone, go check out Barton's pod and give a 5-star review, because you guys do listener questions episodes when you hit certain benchmarks at the reviews. So I very much enjoyed those. But Barton, today we're kind of talking college football.
Hell yeah.
We are talking about The Program.
Most of my players are farm boys, or they're from the inner cities. Hey! Football is their deliverance.
From different worlds.
When I turn pro, I'm going to get you the house to go with it.
From different lives.
Welcome to college.
They've come to pursue a dream.
Hey,
any football program worth his name.
Elite group of warriors.
I'm gonna bust your gut open and watch you die!
Talent unites them.
You gonna lead us to the promised land? The
question is, can you boys follow me?
Competition divides them. Touchstone Pictures and the Samuel Goldwyn Company present a story of what it takes.
Get it up! Come on, man!
To fight the pressure.
Yeah.
Face the pain. And survive the program. Rated R.
A 1993 college football drama. Several players from different backgrounds try to cope with the pressures of playing football at the fictional Eastern State University. Each deals with the pressure differently, some turning to drinking, others turning to drugs, some to studying. It starred James Caan, Omar Epps, Craig Sheffer, and a very young Halle Berry. It was written and directed by David S. Ward, who also wrote and directed Major League. Got a 43% on Rotten Tomatoes, grossed $23 million at the box office, which was a small profit. Barton, what was your initial experience with this movie? When did you first see it?
So it was 1993, right? And so yeah. I actually couldn't. I thought I was maybe early high school, maybe like eighth grade. 93, I would have been. That would have been like sixth or seventh grade for me. And I remember really sort of embracing it. Maybe in like eighth grade, seventh or eighth grade. I remember like that was, and that was as I was starting to sort of fall in love with the game of football. I started playing in sixth grade. I was always a basketball guy. And this movie, for me, it really kind of articulated a lot of the really, and it's a ridiculous movie in a lot of ways. It's like so heavy-handed and cheesy and
it's kind of absurd. Much a caricature of a lot of college football cliches.
Very much so. Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure we'll get into all of that. But I actually think at the heart of it, this movie like really helped me fall in love with the game and helped me sort of put a little bit of a description as to sort of some of the things I really loved about the sport. And, you know, it probably had a negative influence on me in a way too, because, you know, we're out there in like the seventh grade field and, you know, talking all kinds of shit that we had no business talking and like trying to pretend like we're Alvin Mack or Darnell Jefferson. And, you know, I remember like I would write like Darnell Jefferson on my tennis shoes and like in the inside of my hats and stuff. And he was just sort of my guy. And so it was, you know, I was just a young kid, just sort of kind of awkward and didn't know what he was doing, but it, in a way this movie was it kind of helped me crystallize, you know, why I liked football.
I think I wanted to ask you, that wasn't on the run sheet, but I wanted to ask you and get on the record about when you saw this movie, because I think a lot sometimes with a sports movie especially is kind of when you saw it, what it meant to you at the time impacts how you feel about it, even as you watch it as an adult and see some faults or, you know, see some differences. Like a movie like that for me is Little Big League, which I still think is pretty good, still holds up pretty well. But from when I saw it, how important it was to me as a kid and as a kid who rooted for the Minnesota Twins, like it just takes it up an extra notch for me. With all that being said, for you, is it a Hall of Fame, all-star starter or bench warmer sports movie?
So I think if you're talking just objectively, what I think the common perception of this movie should be as a movie critic in like the pantheon of sports movies, like it's probably a starter at best. But for me personally, this is without question a Hall of Fame movie. This is probably one of the most important movies. And I really in rewatching it in preparation for this, it sort of reaffirmed like this is one of the probably most important movies of my life. That sounds ridiculous to say after watching it, but it probably is.
I really appreciate that kind of nuanced take on that about, because I would say it's a starter too. It's kind of the thing about it. It's strange that there's not many college football movies, and that's something we're going to talk really about in a second. But to me, this is kind of like, it reminded me a lot of Days of Thunder, which Days of Thunder to me reminded me of the Top Gun of NASCAR, and just mm-hmm. like trying to hit a bunch of exciting stereotypes and then take them up a notch. Like right. it grabs all these major college football cliches, like obviously player misbehavior, pressure on athletes, impermissible benefits, steroid use, and just the stereotype of that these programs will do anything to win. You see it again in Blue Chips a couple years later with basketball. You see it come out in the high school level in Varsity Blues a little bit in Friday Night Lights. You know, to me, like if I was just to put a full, this movie went like 8-5 or 7-6 or something. It had some tools. It had the tools on the field to where it could have gotten to like a New Year's Six Bowl if everything clicked, but that just, it didn't come together. It didn't win the ball games it needed to win.
It was trying to do, it's like, the offensive coordinator that comes in that he just spent all offseason studying at the, with every NFL coach he's ever met and tries to install every bell and whistle he possibly can in the offense when he should have just run, off tackle and four verts and he would have been fine. But they tried to throw it all at you.
Do way too much.
Every stereotype you could ever imagine, they threw it at you. But to the movie's credit though, there are some lines and some moments and some scenes in there that are much more relevant and on point than probably it even got credit for at the time. For that, again, I think it's actually like a much more relevant and even accurate movie than probably it gets credit for on first glance.
Since there's so few college football movies, it's hard to compare it to a lot because there's few college football movies and there's fewer like it. Like, this is not in the same kind of class as a movie like Rudy or, The Blind Side, if you want to call that a college football movie, The Express, those biopics. Like, for you, what do you think the best college football movie ever made is?
I mean, I guess...
Are we looking at it?
I mean, I guess, if I'm with a bunch of movie critics and we're sitting around and talking about the best college football movie of all time, I guess I'd say Rudy to try not to sound, to try to earn their respect or something. But I mean, for me, this is it. I mean, it's really not a question. I remember watching, one year in high school, we had a game, like, I think before the state championship game, they played, we had like the team got together and they just played a movie, and I think they played Everybody's All American. It's probably one of those movies that our coach saw when he was a kid and thought it was good, and like it was the most boring thing ever. And like Waterboy is, I guess, a college football movie. Like, I didn't really do it for me. Like, it's just sort of stupid humor. Rudy is just it is what it is. This is the movie. Like, this is, to me, it's not close. It's this movie.
This one has some teeth. Before this, we've only covered two college football movies on the pod before. We covered Necessary Roughness, which came out, I think, 2 years before this. And
it's kind of the OG of like the modern college football movies.
It's just, it falls so flat. I don't know when the last time you've seen it is. It doesn't hold up in nearly any way possible. And then there's The Waterboy, which, like, Adam Sandler is very important to me.
Yeah.
Like that run, the Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, Waterboy, Big Daddy run is unparalleled, is like right when I was coming into comedy. So I love that one. I think that is probably my favorite. Rudy is a slog. And like, I do get the chills when he gets that debatably offside sack, but Rudy is a grind to watch, really. And like, my favorite part about Rudy is realizing that Jon Favreau and Vince Vaughn are going to do Swingers a few years later, and that just makes me very, very happy. Something about the football stuff in this movie, something that you guys talk about on your podcast a lot, is the culture of a program. And then Bud also has a thing, the blue chip ratio. Bud's blue chip ratio. Could you break a program needs to have greater than 50% 4 and 5 stars versus other recruits to have a shot at winning a national championship. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. Basically, you can have a good team, or you can have a bad team. Your roster can look all kinds of different ways, but if you want to win a national championship, your roster needs to be composed of more than 50% blue chips. And by blue chips, the definition is a 4 or 5 star prospect. And there's not many teams that have that makeup, because most of the 4 and 5 star prospects are funneled to a handful of teams. And so, for instance, when Bud did the calculation this year, there's only 15 teams, I think, which is probably about normal. And so that is sort of our, in a way, it's how you sort of just weed out the who has the talented enough roster to contend for sort of the highest level.
So this movie is pre, like, the prospect composites and the ratings and everything like that. But if you're looking at this program, you're looking at Coach Winters, do you think he had the culture that he's built in that program is a blue chip ratio culture? Because it's not, they're coming off a few tough years, but just being on the right side of the blue chip ratio is a guarantee. So if I'm not mistaken, Miami has been on the right side of that recently with less than stellar results.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams that have been on the right side of it with that have not had success. I think I actually wrote down, like, so early in the movie, you know, he's in the, like, well, I guess you'll sort of run through a few of the scenes, but like early in the movie, he's in the athletic director's office or the president's office, and they're talking about basically his job being on the hot seat. And they say, so he's been there 12 years, and the previous two seasons, they missed a bowl. So, and this was back when there was only 11 games. So we're talking about, you know, he's won no more than 10 games out of his last 22. And he's heading into a season on the hot seat. And so I was trying to think, like, what would be a coach that would sort of be the contemporary version of this guy? Like, maybe, I thought maybe like Dave Doran at NC State, or, you know, like a best case scenario given it for the blue chip ratio perspective, maybe like he's Brian Kelly after he's hit just sort of a really, you know, that 4-8 year when just the coaching staff was a mess and they had Brian Van Gorder as their DC, and, like, you know, maybe that's sort of a comparable program. You know, you could see maybe a Will Muschamp or a Kyle Whittingham or even a Kirk Ferentz maybe could go through a couple years like that. But ultimately, I landed on, like, no chance that they are above the 50% threshold.
Yeah, he doesn't do it for me in terms of recruiting. I'm going to get into it. I'm not too high on Coach Winters. I was trying to think of any sort of coach he reminded me of. And it's funny you mentioned Muschamp, because the movie's filmed at Williams-Brice. But Winters to me is very, and this is something the IMDb trivia triggered it, because there's a character in the movie named Bobby Collins, who is named after SMU coach Bobby Collins. But when you think about how he's depicted in the Pony Excess, the document, the 30 for 30 about the SMU, you know, paying players scandal, and Bobby Collins in that, I don't know anything about his career outside of that documentary, but he just comes off as very overwhelmed by what's going on in his program and what's going on with his players, and not really able to get a grasp on that. And that is kind of what Coach Winters reminded me of.
Yeah, it feels like Coach Winters has been, like, he's messed around, had some success, at, like, maybe like a Butch Jones, you know, like had a good run at Cincinnati, and thought he had it under control at Tennessee, thought he knew what he was doing, but then just the job just got too big for him too quick. Now, granted, Coach Winters has been around for 12 years, so he must have had a pretty good run at one point. But no, the game seems to be moving past him at this point. Like, he's getting in a little over his head.
I didn't see this movie until I reached, like, early adulthood. I think I saw it, like, in college or right after college. And the entire movie, I had the assumption, like, oh, he's retiring when this is done. He's retiring or he's getting fired. And when it comes off as, like, he's, you know, he looks at Joe Kane and they're talking about Heisman next year and stuff. I'm like, oh, he's coming back, huh? That's interesting. I figured he was pretty checked out.
But that's a classic, though. That's a head, like, all these coaches, I mean, they all got money. You wonder why any of them are still doing it. They just keep grinding through it. Like, they don't know anything else. And so that's a very head coach thing to do, is just, it doesn't matter how bad the season was, man. All he knows is just go back on the road and get back to the spring recruiting.
Well, that's a point for the authenticity of this one. I'll roll through the IMDb trivia really quick. There's not really a ton for this one. Already mentioned Bobby Collins' name came from the former head coach at SMU. Already mentioned that it was filmed at South Carolina's Williams-Brice Stadium in locations around Columbia. Bo Schembechler, just butchered his name. Coach Bo from Michigan is in the booth providing the color commentary for the Michigan game. And then Andrew Brynarski, Brynarski butchered his name to Latimer. Him and Dwayne Davis, who plays Alvin Mack, also played teammates in Necessary Roughness. Dwayne Davis has this interesting, like, minor character athlete run. He does Necessary Roughness. He does this. He does Little Big League. He does Little Big League a year after he does this, and he's playing a college student in this movie. And in Little Big League, he's playing an aging veteran who gets cut, which is a huge age jump for my guy. But
you want to know the other trivia on Dwayne Davis?
He's in another movie, isn't he?
Well, no, he is. Well, yeah, he is, I'm sure. But do you know who his son is?
No, who's his son?
So his son is Wyatt Davis, who's a starting offensive lineman for Ohio State, who is probably going to be a first or second round pick next year.
Oh, no shit. How did I miss this?
Yeah, yeah. And he's I've messaged with him before, like during his son's recruitment. And he was super nice until late in the game when we didn't rank his son as high as he thought we should have. And all my praise of him for, the movie he produced and how much it impacted me in my early years, it didn't carry me too far when he was pissed off his son when a 5-star offensive lineman.
So was he like Alvin Mack just accusing you of some shit at the line?
No, it was close to it. He was actually, he wasn't like ridiculous, but he wasn't happy with me. With our final ranking, he was not pleased.
Well, all worked out in the end.
That's right. He was still the kid was still the number one offensive guard in the country, so we did something right.
Seems parents, right? Parents always want the best for their kids.
That's right. That's right.
Let's roll into best scene. Gonna do these chronologically. The first one I've got down is just the opening credits, because you get some player motivation for you basically get introduced to your main player characters. You get Darnell's recruitment. You get the motivation of Alvin needing to get a house for his mom, kind of that very cliched stereotype.
Right.
Joe and his shitty drunk dad. I gotta say, it is pretty, to me, even though it's 93, pretty late in the game for a coach to be reaching out to a top tier tailback.
And was it in the opening credits when they actually did his recruiting pitch, like when he went and visited him? And Joe Kane, the rising junior quarterback, was literally on the road recruiting with the head coach, completely illegal. So there's a first recruiting violation of the episode of the movie. There's never been an in-home visit where they bring the starting quarterback along. I can assure you that.
It's just pretty wild that the coach is, I wish they would have shown more with the recruiting, but he seemed just so out of the loop about this guy. Like, he's learning about this top tier back that they desperately need, just like on the plane ride over.
It's like the Spurrier deal when, like, you know, his staff would basically recruit him a class and then hand him the printout of the names on signing day, and he'd just read them off. You know, the dude's just totally going through the motions.
I got to say, yeah, Winners, you could see him doing what was that story on Spurrier where he was like, he was basically hanging out shirtless in his office for his last few years in South Carolina.
Right.
You could see him, doing that. The next scene I've got is the first practice, which is you actually get a lot of football action in this movie, but you get the most like high speed football action in this practice. You get Welcome to the Jungle on, which was awesome. Oh, yeah. You get a bunch of drills that are probably illegal now. Ton of tough hits.
Yeah, it was, I actually, for when we talk about the, like, that was the most authentic football section of the whole movie. Now, the little bit like the full team bull in the ring is probably a little bit much, but the Oklahoma drills, that's what Oklahoma drills look like. That was they actually look like real football players out there. So that was a strong effort by them.
it's interesting that they went very full speed in the practice and then the games not so much. I'd be curious to hear the actual, you know, the actual reasoning behind that. But frankly, I didn't do as much research on that as I probably could have. The next one I've got is the speeches about why they love the game, that preseason banquet. And it's especially Latimer is synced with him cheating on his drug test,
right,
with him walking in the bathroom and having the urine like somehow in the urinal. Pretty yep. interesting. But I actually like hearing those guys talk about why they love football and why they want to play the game, and, you know, Latimer stuff about going to war with your teammates and all that. That actually resonated for me. I think it resonates for anyone who's ever played a sport.
So I'd like each of you to talk about what you like best about football and what you're most proud of off the field. Now I've asked some of my veterans here to start.
Latimer?
I don't know. It's the battle. Going to war with the other guys.
Sit.
Hanging together.
Believe.
Having our own dorm. Staying in hotels the night before the games. Setting ourselves apart. Being different than everybody else. Having a chance to be somebody. To do something that people look up to you for. Your strength, your courage. Not everybody can play football. We're the lucky ones.
That was to me one of the best parts of the movie, because that was legitimate. Like, those were real. Like, those were and the different reasons that all the guys give are like legitimately meaningful reasons that a lot of people cling on to, and that was. By far, like, I think there's a part where you want to talk about like the best scenes or whatever. Like, to me, that was like maybe my favorite scene.
Yeah, it's a really good one. It's probably the one non like actual football action scene that I think hits really well in this one, because most everything off the football field isn't what you come to see this movie for. Because like the next three scenes that I had listed for best scene are just the games. The first game against Mississippi State, where you find out Alvin Mack's an absolute killer. Latimer taking that lid off at the end. I feel right. like it's a penalty. I mean, I get 93 was a different time, but it pretty sure that would have been a face mask penalty. I don't think that ends the game.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Look, just, hey, I mean, back then it was a little bit, things were a little bit more loose with the helmet guidelines, but yeah, I feel like that would have been frowned upon to just head to the tunnel with the opponent's helmet. Looks like you lost your bonnet is definitely one of my favorite lines of the movie.
Yeah, Latimer, full blown psycho. There is an announcing mistake in that one. There's a handoff to Darnell when he goes in, and the announcer, the play-by-play, they do it pass to Jefferson up the middle. I'm like, no, that's not what happened. That was just a simple handoff. I don't know how we messed that up. The game against Michigan, the next one of the three games, that this one gets like the less action. You can just tell it's kind of like a shootout, and you know. I feel like Joe Kane still has a solid Heisman shot after that. And again, different time. You know, undefeated.
Preseason Heisman front runner, rising junior, coming off of a 5-win team. Is there, like, what was the last quarterback that was a Heisman front runner coming off a 5-win team?
You know better than me, but I can't think of it.
I can't think of any either. So that he must have had a hell of a season, and that defense must have been pretty bad.
Unless it was like, what was Matt Barkley's? Because USC was ass Barkley's first 2 years, right? But he wasn't really the Heisman frontrunner until his senior year, and then that just kind of fell flat on its face.
Right,
his junior year there.
Junior year was
his
best year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's that. That
there's
was
probably
tough.
Somebody like there. I'm sure there's a preseason Heisman front runner that's had a bad year or bad team the year before, but that was a little bit of a that didn't quite match up.
Yeah, he gets the SI cover. right. which is wild. The last thing I have for best scene is the final game, which is kind of the sports movie stereotype. The final game is usually what they put the most effort into. Somehow does not start Joe Kane back from rehab. I don't think I've got something about that later. Winners changes to the I formation, last game of the season. Got to ask you about that. How often do you see someone change their offense going into the final game of the season that they need to win?
Well, but was he changing the offensive system, or was he just changing the personnel and putting his tailback at fullback? Because they were still running the were they not running I the rest of the year? I guess they were mainly running split back stuff or whatever. But
yeah, it sounded to me like running the I was gonna be a new thing for them.
This is big, like unveiling the I, like that's this revolutionary formation system that they got to throw at teams, the old I formation.
He's not very inspiring in the halftime speech either. Again, like watching this movie, even rewatching it, I was like, he's got to retire after this. He's just, his heart could not be less in this one. But, you know, you get the last play TD. Everyone's happy. Joe Kane's going to win the Heisman next year. Did I miss any of your favorite scenes?
I mean, every scene with, can I just say, like, Darnell Jefferson, like, he sort of, I tried to take on his persona, and it was when I tried to talk to girls like Darnell Jefferson talked to girls. I tried to like walk around campus like Darnell Jefferson walks around campus, and it probably made me an incredibly obnoxious like eighth or ninth grader. But every scene Darnell Jefferson is in, you know, like when he meets Ray Griffin the first time, like Ray Griffin. Tailback, or no, Darnell Jefferson, tailback, Ray Griffin, starting tailback. Yeah, I know that's why they recruited me. You know, that whole scene was great. You know, all these, just like the, every time that he, it's anytime he had sort of like a moment where Darnell Jefferson is like, I just thought he was so cool. Like, I thought everything Darnell Jefferson was in, like, he was just, that's a cool way to handle that situation.
Omar Epps is kind of a sports movie Hall of Famer. He's got he's got Major League Two, he's got Love and Basketball, and he's always like the smooth athlete.
Yeah, but he's just a good enough athlete to where he can pull it off. But he's not a great athlete. Like he doesn't look supernatural in any of them, but he looks good enough to where he can get away with it.
Yeah, it's not blatantly terrible, but it's good enough, which I think is why they use a lot of slow-mo in this one, because I don't think, besides Dwayne Davis, I don't think they got a ton of athletes in the main cast. Dwayne Davis is probably the only one, because legitimate athlete, like he's got a good swing in Little Big League. He knows what he's doing. I would say my favorite scene, I would say the best scene is actually the speeches. I think if you played sports, and especially if you played football, I'm sure it resonates even more, but I think the speeches and like how they sync up with Latimer's, you know, cheating his drug test and stuff, but kind of guys talking about why they play, is a surprising scene in this movie, because you expect it to be the super rah-rah football movie, and it's actually kind of a very real portrayal of why these guys are doing what they're doing.
So that's my favorite too. And my favorite, every time I watch that movie, like the one that really resonates with me is Latimer's reason for loving the game, because that's really the reason like I love the game, is just the idea that you're playing, like you're making sacrifices not everyone else is making, and that sets you apart, that makes you different, that brings you together as brothers. Like that has always really resonated with me. And so I love that scene. The other one that I really like, this is one of my favorite, because this is one of my favorite scenes and or the transitions, and one of my favorite lines in the movie is when they're in the study hall and the tutor is with Alvin Mack, and he's like, so who were the two city states that fought in the Punic Wars? And Alvin Mack just sort of looks up, like smiling, be like, I don't know, Detroit and Buffalo. And then the scene cuts off, and he like laughs or whatever. And then the scene cuts off, and then the next thing you see, they're in the film room, and it's juxtaposed against, like, all of a sudden, like, Alvin Mack is like sitting straight up front row, And Coach Winters says, you know, what do you have to do when the fullback, you know, what do you do here? And he says, you know, Eagle zipper hero, unless the fullback shifts into the eye. And like, then he says a bunch of like stupid sort of cliche, like kill everybody, kill the quarterback.
Robin, you ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. This is Mississippi State's offensive set. Second and two on our own 24. What defensive set might we call?
Eagle zipper hero, unless the setback shifts into the eye.
Good. Third and seven.
Okie Thunder Lion.
What's your assignment?
Kill the quarterback. Hit the tight end so hard his girlfriend dies. Kill everybody.
There you go.
But point was, like, he was so on top of his shit in the film room, and he couldn't have given two shits when he was in the study hall. And I think that's incredibly, like, to me, that was one of those scenes where, like, you know, on the surface, it can look a little bit cheesy, but really, I think that's a really accurate portrayal of a lot of people and a lot of players. Is like, they're really actually sharp, smart guys when they're motivated and focused on the job at hand in football. They just, you know, school was just a means to get to the NFL. And, you know, so I thought that was like a really incisive scene, and one that I thought was funny and also like totally accurate in terms of a lot of really talented football players.
I had that exact moment written down for what worked about this one and how good I thought of all the characters. They did the best job with him.
Yeah.
Because of that moment, it really is such like an incredible juxtaposition of him when he's not applying himself and him when he's applying himself just completely all in on football. It's something like, there was something like hit the tight end so hard his girlfriend leaves him or something like that. That's just great. He's got some of the best quotes. Let's do best quote, and then we'll take an ad break. You're the when I tweeted at you about this movie, you said you could have recited the whole thing in high school. So you've got to have some. What's your favorite quote from this one? Because the one that resonated for me, and then I'll let you have the floor, was I love the "Are you injured or are you hurt?" one. I'm wondering if that's the first time that actually like hit the lexicon, hit like the pop, because that became that is still a thing in sports. Are you injured or are you hurt?
Yeah, no, but I think that was very much present before that. I think that was just like here's the old football deal, like that, you know, this is how you show. I mean, I think that was there, and so my I don't know, like my favorites are the one that I literally laugh out loud at is the Mississippi State game early in the season. Your first glance at like Alvin Mack and all his shit talking, and he's talking to the tailback, and he's like, "You're the one that, you know, killed my mother," or whatever it was, and the tailback goes, "Come on, man, you know I never knew your mother."
"You're the guy who shot my mother, aren't you?"
"Shut up, man, you know I never knew your mother."
"You're trying to steal a fucking car, you cocksucker." "You didn't think I was going to find you, did you?"
And like just this these puppy dog eyes and like scared shitless. And it's ridiculous. Like, I laugh out loud at it. A tailback would never say that. Like, no one's going to talk to the linebacker before the play and like plead for mercy. But there he is and being like, "Come on, man, you know I never knew your mother." And then during the play too, is another one I just laugh out loud at. Is when Alvin Mack, like the guy's like scared, like he's running scared from Alvin Mack because the guy, he was just sort of talking shit about him. And then Alvin Mack's yelling mid-play, he just yells like, "Get back here, you pussy." And just like, he said, "Come back, you little pussy." And it's like the way he says it and like in this chase, and he's just like chasing his little brother or something. And then, you know, Latimer comes and decapitates him, and then game's over. I just thought that whole thing was just like hilarious and absurd. But again, like when you're in eighth grade or something, you're like, "Oh yeah, like this is the greatest sport of all time."
Almost everything Alvin Mack says is great. I even love the moment, and I don't have the exact quote written down. I wish I did. When Darnell, when the booster slips Darnell that money, and Alvin Mack just basically takes it off of him after he talks to him about it. I love that little moment. Let's take a quick ad break, and then we're going to get back with the most authentic and least authentic parts of this movie. Big Screen Sports is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-belt grooming. Now, Manscaped wants me to push the Lawnmower 3.0, and for good reason. It's an incredible trimmer. I, like many of you, have unfortunately savaged my balls while using inferior trimmers. So the Lawnmower 3.0 is the greatest trimmer ever created. But I want to shout out Manscaped's new underwear. I had had Manscaped underwear in the past, and it wasn't quite up to snuff. And I just got some new Manscaped underwear, and it is top tier. It is up there with any sort of other underwear that you have heard advertised on podcasts, and it is at a much cheaper price. I am a huge fan of Manscaped underwear. I just bought myself a couple new pairs just because I was so impressed with it. But between the underwear, the Lawnmower 3.0, Manscaped is just fucking killing it. And I encourage you to use promo code BIGSCREEN at manscaped.com. Get 20% off and free shipping. That's your Lawnmower 3.0, your underwear. You can get a grooming kit on there. 20% off and free shipping with code BIGSCREEN at manscaped.com. Help this pod, and more importantly, help your balls. Big Screen Sports is also brought to you by our presenting sponsor, betonline.ag. Sports are finally coming back. Finally, I watched baseball tonight. That's crazy. Real live baseball. No better place to start betting on baseball, betting on everything else, than our exclusive partner, BetOnline. Get in on the action for, you know, UFC fights, NASCAR, Formula One, Premier League, and again, baseball, folks. Baseball. BetOnline also has daily simulations of Madden, NBA 2K, bunch of stuff to do at BetOnline. Visit betonline.ag, use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. All right, and we're back. Barton, this one is, we said earlier, it's very much a bunch of college football cliches, but I think there's a lot here to build off. I think there's a lot here that, you know, you've already identified a lot that actually comes off as authentic. For you, what's the most authentic sports-centric part of this one?
I think there's, I mean, we talked about some of it. Like, I thought that the... you know, just in terms of the actual on-field stuff, like, you know, like I said, the Oklahoma drill, like, looked real. Like, there's some stuff that looks real. The banquet is like, that's very authentic, comes off real to me. The Alvin Mack stuff. The other one that we haven't talked about, when after he gets the you know, takes the money from Darnell Jefferson, you know, he's like, matter of fact, I'm gonna, like, what do you say? Like, matter of fact, I'm gonna hold that for you until you see the light. And then, you know, Darnell Jefferson's like, you know, he's sort of wide eyed, and, Alvin Mack's like, what did he say? He said, like, man, athletic department gets $3 million just for going to a bowl. They ought to be paying our ass anyways, or something like that. Like, that at the time was sort of like, you know, brush it off, whatever. But as we sit here today, like, that's probably in the entire movie one of the most relevant, applicable lines in the whole thing. Is like, even back in 1993, there's this idea that those guys are just getting a raw deal, and now that's become this very popular talking point. But, you know, Alvin Mack saw that back then. He wasn't a fool.
What I had down for most authentic was just the character of Alvin Mack. And that's part of one of the reasons. He is, like a lot of star college football players, Alvin Mack is from a tough situation. You see that at multiple points in the film. But he's also aware of his worth, and he's aware of his future in the NFL. And I feel like they poured so much of the authenticity of and the stuff that works into Alvin Mack. They didn't really spread the ball. It was like they were just, he was like their Julio Jones, and they're just like, we're going to feed him the ball. We're going to throw at him 25 times and just make sure he gets his numbers. But they didn't really spread it. I thought what they did with him and just his character felt the most authentic to me. And it felt like the most, you know, the only other one that I had was, as far as like something super authentic, I don't know if it's super authentic, but I just love that the movie talked about the background to a Heisman campaign, because I don't think that's something that has been touched in any other college football movie, and like the school actually going for it. I think for me, the first Heisman campaign I think about is Joey Harrington as the billboard in Times Square. But I love that. I don't know how truly authentic it was. As someone who covers college football, you would know that much better than me. But I loved that look into. I love that they shot that shot with the Heisman campaign.
Yeah, the you know, I think like parts of that were certainly authentic. Parts of it were like when she stops the interview and is like, "Hey, man, like just why don't you just tell him that you don't care about anything?" Like I don't know that anyone's. I shouldn't say that. I mean, we got Iowa, you know, supposedly like giving guys printouts of what they're allowed to say and, you know, policing social media and who knows what else is going on out there. But that was a little bit like cliche a little bit where she was like totally fashioning his message. The other thing I don't know if we're going to talk about this because it was, but I thought as I was watching the movie, I was like, this relationship between Darnell Jefferson and Halle Berry is like ridiculous. But the more I thought about it, I was like, you know what? Like the relationship between Joe Kane and that girl's name was, like that felt ridiculous. That felt like unbelievable and stupid and like you just I wasn't invested in that relationship at all. But the Halle Berry and Darnell Jefferson relationship, in retrospect, like thinking about it, like that's actually probably very representative of a college relationship. This chick who's like totally playing both sides of the fence, like totally kind of dating both guys, like doesn't really know what she wants. Sometimes she's this sort of like bold, you know, academics are important, you know, mature girl. Sometimes she's like, you know, telling Ray Griffin that, you know, she's got to take some time and talk to him later and go ice skating with Darnell Jefferson. It's like that really is kind of what college relationships are like. Just drama, ridiculous shit happening. And it's just what you're like when you're 20 years old or 19 years old.
It's almost a bummer to me because what they tried to do with the romantic subplots were just both tough looks. But it's interesting that they did the whole thing with Ray Griffin and Darnell Jefferson trying to date the same, you know, both trying to date a future Oscar winner, which is just wild to think about when you think about this movie.
Right.
But don't show it really playing out. And because like they show Ray Griffin missing the block in the last game, but that shit would have played out way much sooner than him missing a block on the biggest stage in the last game. Like it would have ended with him like lighting Darnell Jefferson up in practice somehow or something.
Right.
Like it wouldn't have, they wouldn't have just gone their separate ways until the game. But as far as the least authentic sports centric parts of the movie, what really sticks out for you in this one? I feel like there's a few nominees.
Yeah. I mean the Alvin Mack shit talking is completely ridiculous. I mean, just completely ridiculous.
But it's so good.
Like you got like it's very forgivable. Like it has to be in the movie. Those are the best parts of the movie. I did think it was funny, like the play got hurt when they're playing Iowa. Like I kept on rewinding that scene, trying to be like because as many times I've watched that movie, I still couldn't draw up on like a whiteboard what happens in that play. Like it looks like there's a toss sweep and the fullback's like arc blocking to the linebacker and Alvin Mack's pursuing, and then the running back cuts back, and then like the backside tackle like pulls all the way across the formation and blindsides Alvin Mack. And it's like just this ridiculous like series of movements to where like what in God's name is going on this play right now.
They almost imply that the guy is doing it just because Alvin Mack talks shit to him too.
Right. As if like there's that going on in the middle of plays. Scores being settled. So like that stuff was all pretty absurd, but very welcomed, like very forgivable. Glad they have him.
The thing I had for least authentic, and I mean, and I'll defer to you on this, but hypothetically, say you had a quarterback who was good enough where he was considered the Heisman front runner, and that guy had to miss 4 weeks to go to rehab. I mean, say like
well, that's pretty I don't know if that's what you're saying is the inauthentic part, but that in and of itself is, has that ever happened? I can't think of it.
No. I mean, and Coach Winters, there's no way that, I mean, like,
hell no.
A&M got Johnny Manziel out there every week besides that half at Rice. But like, hypothetically, say you have a Johnny Manziel type and he has to miss 4 weeks because of something. And the team goes 1-3 while he's gone with the backup quarterback, who is also a complete shithead. There's no way. I don't even care if the guy hasn't picked up a football in 4 weeks, like Joe Kane presumably hadn't. There is no way that Winters is not starting his potential Heisman quarterback when he has to win that game. No way.
Well, I'll give them credit for at least trying to lay this, like, plant the seed when he walked out of the rehab and being like, hadn't touched a football in a month, just ping pong in there. Like, that's a lot of rust to shake off. But man, Bobby Collins is pretty. He's a pretty rough player himself.
And he's a tough hang. And I mean, like, he got Winter's daughter expelled, and and Winter still chooses to start him in a game where they also say it's for the conference championship, but the team has 4 losses. That didn't ride with me either. I don't see how that could have happened.
I was also just laughing at, like, all right, so on Coach Winter's watch, there was Bobby Collins uses his daughter to cheat on a test. They both get expelled. His star defensive end gets in trouble for attempted rape. But they don't seem that worried about the attempted rape. They seem more worried about what that means regarding his steroid use. So because of the steroid issue, not the rape issue, but the steroid issue, he's suspended for a couple games. You've got your starting quarterback gets in a bar fight, throws somebody through a window, and gets a DUI on the same night. You've got your fullback missing blocks on purpose to get your running back hit, both of whom are arguing and fighting over the same girl. Just a fucking mess in terms of culture. Like, Coach Winters is, I mean, that thing is an absolute nightmare in terms of culture. So that is not one that I'd be doing a lot of betting on. I'd be staying away from that one.
Yeah, you and Bud a couple weeks back were talking about which programs are going to be able to handle this weird shortened COVID offseason better. And a lot of the ones you put stock in, you stressed that the culture was there. It was something like, you know, quarterback, offensive continuation, guys coming back, and then culture. There's a level of expectation at that program. And it's just like the opposite at this one. Like, imagine this program coming off this weird COVID offseason. Like, they might go winless. There's just nothing there. Winters has built absolutely nothing in terms of culture.
No. At least they've got and Alvin Mack's like the only guy holding it all together. Like, that's the only guy that's got any leadership about him. And I thought this was funny too. Like, I was laughing at, so they have because Alvin Mack and Latimer are like, they're boys, right? Like, they're the two stars of the defense. And before the first game of the season, they do the deal where they hit each other's shoulder pads and they spit in each other's mouth. And it's sort of this show of, like, primal, brotherhood. But I was laughing. It's like, Latimer just spent the last 3 years on the punt team. That's what they said. Like, he is a total scrub, added 35 pounds, and they're worried about his steroid use. And all of a sudden, Alvin Mack is letting him spit in his mouth. This dude who's been on the damn punt team for 3 straight years. Like, that was, like, a little bit funny to me to think about. Just, that's, you don't go from scrub to spitting in the best player's mouth just because of steroids.
There's a lot that just doesn't add up. But like I kind of said earlier, this one had some pieces in play that would have worked. I want to talk about it later, but I think this is a movie that's prime for a remake. But what else about this one, worked for you? Like, I thought the football action looked good enough. It's better to have that much slow-mo and give you time to process things, what's going on, than have quicker action that looks terrible. That's kind of like the necessary roughness problem. It looks like shit. What else for this one, you know, worked for you?
I mean, I think ultimately, like, there was just the team element, the team dynamic. I think it was, like I said, it was very cliche, but I do think the general sort of attempt at recreating the different factions within a team, the different personalities that all have to come together. I mean, Bobby Collins was a classic backup quarterback. We've all had one of those guys. You know, the big, dumb, jolly offensive lineman. Like, that's that. Like, that guy exists everywhere. The leader of a defense, the leader of a team, like Alvin Mack. I mean, he was really the bigger leader than Joe Kane. A lot of those cliche elements really do exist in some way, and I thought that rung true to me.
Yeah, they had those pieces in place. They got all the surrounding stuff they needed. It was nice for them to get like the Berman cameo, the Lynn Swan cameo, get a real stadium in there. Like, that's another thing. The Necessary Roughness just did fucking terribly. A few things, like the character of Latimer, like the man himself is a dumpster fire, but he's got two eternal moments. Though, when he shoves his head through the windows after he finds out that he's made starting defense, and then his like skeleton face paint that probably took him an hour and a half before the game, if not longer, like those have very much lasted the near 30 years since this movie came out.
There's still guys that are that feel like they inspired from Latimer. It seems like the way they put their face paint on for games, which is kind of ridiculous, but I feel like Latimer started that back in the day. I also this is another point where I literally laughed out loud when I was watching it, was when they're doing the two-a-days in the preseason, and he's doing like, you know, clean and jerk, or not even clean and jerk, like clean and just like overhead press, and then he like throws the bar down and he starts like kicking it and just sort of like can't control just the anger he has at the bar, just his roid rage.
Shit, Latimer's an animal all of a sudden. He's got to be on something.
Steroids? How come you always think my guys are the ones juicing anyway?
He's on the punt return team for 3 years. Then he gains 35 pounds of rip in one summer and an attitude to go with it.
Gentlemen, we're not doctors. The NC2A has a testing program for this kind of thing. I suggest we let them handle it. And it's not that hard to gain 35 pounds over summer if you hit the gym real hard.
I thought that was just kind of hilarious. Like, he does such a good job of just being a lunatic.
They tried to make sure, like, they hit you over the head with, hey, this guy's on steroids, and that makes him really, really angry.
Right.
They really go all out making sure that he's like Mark McGuire with anger issues. I have to ask about Joe Kane's motorcycle, because like Winners takes it, but it would have been news that the potential Heisman quarterback was driving a motorcycle around campus. Like, I feel like that would have been a massive, massive story. Like, imagine if Tua was rolling around Tuscaloosa in a fucking Harley just like before the season.
Yeah, that was and that was, again, like this whole relationship with I can't remember the girl's name, but that whole relationship was just that she's just like goes from, you know, thinking he's a total asshole to like, my dad's never gonna let me ride on a motorcycle, to, well, you got a helmet, all right, let's roll. Like, it was just, the whole thing just went from 0 to 60 way too fast.
Very toxic motorcycle date when he nearly throws him off the mountain. Her name was Camille, I believe.
Camille. God, I wouldn't even guess that.
Yeah. So. Let's get into what didn't work about this one. And I want to start off with something, and I want your take on it. When we think of this movie's called The Program. When we think of a program, we think of a coach, like the face of the program, Saban, Dabo. This movie, like, no pun intended, this movie fondled the face of the program. Like, you're either want to see a coach who's really good at his job and someone you really want to root for, or someone like Bud Kilmer from Varsity Blues, who's like the fucking root of all evil and you need him out of there. With this one, it seems like everything is happening around him instead of everything happening because of him, which is like, if you're looking at Alabama or Clemson, you feel like everything is happening because of Dabo or Saban. And I don't get that feel about Coach Winters at all.
No. Yes. He was very much like the reinstatement hearing for Bobby Collins when he like snapped about, you know, how many, 80,000 people coming to the stands to watch a science experiment. And he sort of like lost himself. It was almost like a senile moment or something. Like he just the whole movie. And I couldn't tell whether I feel like at the end of it, they wanted us to sort of be bought in to Coach Winters as the father figure that Joe Kane always needed. But that dude, like, I mean, you sent him to rehab at the end of the year. But like, it wasn't because he like had any real like heartfelt feelings for Joe Kane. It was just like people were just sort of making him do it. Like there was never really any sense on like what exactly is Coach Winters. And so I think you're right. Like, I think Coach Winters ultimately is just this guy. The game's passed him by. He's got a little long in the tooth. Like all these young guys are starting to run circles around him, and he's almost like the end of the Joe Pa years when Joe Pa's up there in like the press box with an injured hip, like
with his broken leg. Like, yeah, Coach Winters, he went about this whole movie like he had a tea time in 30 minutes he had right. to get to and just needed all this shit to be over. Right. But what you said about Joe, like them wanting to pass him off as Joe's father figure, like there's not a conversation with Joe about what's under his actions when he gets in that fight and he has that DUI. There's never some sort of come to Jesus moment about like, hey, I see you're dealing with all this pressure, or some even like a corny speech I would have taken on episodes of this pod. Sometimes I'll talk about, especially with football coaches, do they pass the brick wall test? Would you run through a brick wall to play for this guy? And Winters is an absolute no, just absolutely yeah. not. And the thing is, like, I love James Caan. James Caan in The Godfather, it's an iconic role, and he just like.
He's not scared to mail in a role either.
James Caan will take the fuck out of a paycheck. Like without a doubt. But like you watching him and the other two coaches, also there's not nearly the amount of coaches that there would be in this one, but when how they sweep Latimer's thing under the table is just really tough. Like I get 93s a different time, but whew, that's a bad look.
Yeah, that was a bad look. It was also a little bit uncomfortable when they just like when Joe Kane just you know, Darnell Jefferson shows up for his official visit and Joe Kane just like, here's the pretty girl. And it's like that's a little bit dated. Like that's not, I don't know if that's kosher these days. And then, you know, Darnell Jefferson expects a kiss at the end of the tour. That stuff all was a little old school.
That wouldn't make it into 2020 without a doubt.
The other thing I thought was like, you know, not as big picture as what you're talking about, but just like hilarious how heavy-handed they were with it was, first of all, Alvin Mack's home is literally like a farmhouse from like the 1920s or something. And more like 1800s. And his sisters are literally wearing like Little House on the Prairie, like clothing. And it's just like, that's, yeah, I guess somebody lives like that. But
they were how can we make him look like 1890s poor? Right. Not 93 poor. Like he needs to look like the poorest college football player on the planet.
Right, right. And then conversely, Joe Kane's father literally lives in like an industrial factory. Like the back door, like the back porch is like literally like 2 feet away from smokestacks. And it's like you guys couldn't have just put him in a trailer. Like, we got to go, he's literally paying rent to the factory. I thought that was just hilarious.
Another thing about Joe Kane's dad, how, like, the drunk dad, the one thing in that guy's life that he would have fucking loved is living vicariously through his star quarterback son. That dude would have been at every practice in Joe's college because he has nothing else going on. Like, he would have rolled up with the 12-pack, parked his lawn chair on the field because his son's the starting quarterback and he can do that. Like, there's no way he'd be so tuned out to his football playing his star quarterback son. Just absolutely no way that's happening.
He has to be like the least motivated character in movie history. He just lays on a couch looking at smokestacks, drinking beer, and doesn't even want to take a free ticket to go see a football game.
He's the football movie version of Grandpa Joe from Willy Wonka.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
The only other thing I had of note that, like, two big things that didn't work. The romantic love stories, they could have cut most, if not all, of both of them. I'm fine. I mean, I, like everyone else, loves Halle Berry. She's very important. She's very important to the culture. You could have just cut that shit out. I wouldn't have cared. And then for a top-rated recruit running back, Darnell is extremely naive about being given money at this thing. I don't think he would have gone through his recruitment if he was really that kind of recruit without someone waving some bills in his face.
I will say about the relationships, at least Halle Berry advanced Darnell Jefferson in some way. Like, there was some plots, sort of intricacies there that were involved, and like, he had like personal growth because she pushed him, and you know, he kind of had a chip on his shoulder because she liked the pre-med light-skinned guy better than him or whatever. And so there's some of that element that at least like served to move the plot forward. The Joe Kane relationship was just pointless. Like, they didn't have any, there was no real like meaningful like talks, like nothing. They didn't had no breakthroughs. They had no, like, when he went to rehab, he just ignored her. When he came back, he brought a six pack of Sprite, and all of a sudden she was like fired up again to see him. Like,
my fiance pointed this out. He goes, "Do you want to split a six pack? Can you imagine how bad drinking three Sprites would be?" Holy shit. But you're right in that that relationship brings out, you should have cut that out and involved more of his relationship with Coach Winters.
It was almost as if they just felt like they had to have a quarterback. They got to have a quarterback and a girl relationship. Like, it's just everything. We got every other cliche in the book. Like, we got to make sure the quarterback's got his girl.
Yeah, I mean, and we also can't not point out that the guy who played Joe Kane, Craig Sheffer, was 33 years old, and he looked every bit of those 33 right. years. That hairline was not junior in college. Let's get into the Kevin Costner and Freddie Prinze Jr. Awards for Best and Worst On-Screen Athlete. This movie doesn't really give you as much of a look at what the guys can do on the field. Was there anyone who stood out as really good or really bad for you?
I think Alvin Mack moved good. He was a good athlete. He's a no-doubt athlete. I actually thought late in the game when Ray Griffin moved to fullback and they had him run a couple routes, he looked pretty good. But the guy that was the missing like character that I want to know more about is Flea Ward. You know Flea Ward, who's the receiver that caught like the touchdown pass early in the game? Like, he never talks. You never see him except for in the highlights when he's like making plays. That dude runs some crisp routes. He's pretty sharp. Like,
and it's strange that Joe Kane is so tight with the freshman running back, but he's never hanging out with his favorite receiver.
That's right. His go-to receiver is never around. All he does is hang out with the linebacker and the freshman running back. It's a little bit, raises some red flags there.
He must be a tough hang. As far as worst on-screen athlete, I mean, Craig Sheffer, Joe Kane, it didn't look like he quite had a rocket, but they pretty much give all of his throws in slow-mo. Either that or his it's either that. If it's not in slow-mo, it's clearly his stunt double.
Any athletic movement had to have been a stunt double. He's tools deficient, as we say in the game. He's small with a weak arm. Like, I'm trying to think what Heisman contending quarterback could have possibly looked like him. I don't know, like maybe like Josh Heupel when he was at Oklahoma or something.
Yeah, I was going to say Jason White.
But it was like, right, he's this small, unathletic quarterback, though he did make, they tried to make it seem like he could make some runs. But he's a small and athletic quarterback that's running a power, like a, what do they call it, the Thunder Eye, and is a Heisman Trophy candidate. Go figure.
Tough look. The Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character. I have five nominees. I have Andrew Berniarski as Latimer. Halle Berry is Autumn, future Oscar winner Halle Berry. Doesn't belong in this movie, honestly. Abraham Ben-Ruby is Bud Light Kaminsky, who we really haven't talked about much, but he's just a true joy.
Yes.
Dwayne Davis is Alvin Mack, if you want to call him a supporting character. Same with Omar Epps as Darnell Jefferson. Everyone kind of shares the ball. There's not really a single main character, but I guess I would say guys who are clear supporting are Bud Light Kaminsky. And I guess Halle Berry, I guess Latimer too. Latimer doesn't get a ton of play. He doesn't get near as much as like Alvin Mack or Darnell Jefferson.
Yeah, if we can't count Alvin Mack, then I think you probably got to go Latimer, because just his portrayal of a roid raging college kid is, I don't know other, I don't, I've never really known. Like none, to my knowledge, none of my teammates in college were roided up. I've never, I think, experienced roid rage knowingly, but he certainly, I don't know if that's what roid rage looks like. I'm glad I haven't, but I think that was entertaining at the very least.
So in the 27 years since this movie has come out, how many of those years would Latimer have spent in prison?
I mean I don't know if it's funny, but like the guy smashed his head through windows, tried to rape a girl, is on couldn't beat steroids. You know he's not making it in the NFL. So like this dude's life, the purpose for his life, he's had 3 years on the punt team. Now he's got his one year of glory as a defensive end. It's all coming to an end at the end of this movie as the credits roll. Like, what's next for Latimer? Like, just nothing. Like, meth is next for Latimer.
he probably gets one. He plays off his name and his fame playing for ESU, and he gets like a strength job coach at a high school for a high school football team, but he loses it probably first semester, I think.
Yes.
Like he throws a player, like a high school student, in their locker, and they're just like, hey man, you just can't do that shit. You're fired. And then it goes to like he's a bouncer, and then he's hanging out with a biker gang, and then it's meth, and then he's in like the shootout scene in the first season of True Detective. Like Latimer's deep into that shit.
Yeah, it goes downhill quick for Latimer.
it's tough look no for question. Latimer. He's probably doing 20 to life right now. No. The big chill moment in which, you know, like the Roy Hobbs knocking out the light moment in the natural, the moment that makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. I don't know if this movie has one. The closest I got, there's the last second TD, but at that point I wasn't sure I cared enough about the team winning. I really like Jefferson's slow-mo punt return, but I really don't think I got there. I got to like the chills. Did you have anything?
There isn't one that you could like put up with any other movie, but like the sensation happened one time, and it was when Ray Griffin got up and like completed the block after stumbling down near the goal line to help spring Darnell Jefferson for the run, but it's ridiculous that causes chills, because the reason that was a big deal was because he had purposefully missed a block, which created a fumble, which they could have lost the game because of. And so like, you really shouldn't give any goodwill to this dude, but you know, somehow it it got my hairs up just ever so slightly.
That's true. If you don't think about it too much, it's got a big chill moment. But then it's like, oh, this is actually a real tough look. The next category, would this make a good 30 for 30, like a good sports documentary? I actually don't think it'd be anything groundbreaking, honestly. I don't think it would shatter the world. There have been some really good college football docs, like 30 for 30s, the U, the Pony Excess, which I mentioned earlier. I'm not sure anything on this season would, you know, unless it's like a documentary about Latimer and what has happened in his life, and this is just a sliver of it, but yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, or an Alvin Mack 30 for 30. I could do an Alvin Mack 30 for 30. You know, how he grew up, you know, what his 8-man football team look like in that farm town of wherever, you know, Eastern Oklahoma or something. And you know, what happens after the injury and what kind of crops they grow in that farm, you know, all that would be, I'd watch that.
Then let's go into how to improve it, because the first things first, I needed a better ending for Alvin Mack. I don't like that Coach Winters got a happy ending, Joe Kane got a happy ending. Alvin Mack is still, he's still at his mom's house with his busted ass leg. I needed him to be like added, like Coach Winters saying, "You'll always have a place on my staff," or something like that, at least.
Yeah, but I think that was the movie's attempt to just like keep it super real. Like, oh, like you think it's all going to be a happy ending? Like, here's Alvin Mack, your favorite character in the whole show. It's not going to be okay for him. It's like, well, that sucks. But I'm with you. I mean, he is literally the best guy on it. So I don't know. Like the thing that where I actually went to is, like how to improve it. I would love to see this movie with a spread offense. Like everyone in the show is running two backs, I formation, under center, drop back. I just thought I mean, that's what they ran back then. So that's fair that's what the direction that they went. But the offenses, it's just funny to look at the offenses, how outdated they are. You know, let's see a shotgun formation once or twice, and see how that goes. But it was beyond that. Like I said, this movie was perfect for me.
Well, let's kind of roll that into combine it with the last category before, more, restore, remake, prequel or sequel. I think this one would be, I would love to see a modern day college football movie that's a little less cliche, a little more grounded, something kind of similar to a college football version of Friday Night Lights. I would dump my wallet out for that right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think that'd be pretty dope. The Last Chance U sort of has served as that a little bit. Have you watched much of that on Netflix?
Yeah, I watched the first season.
That was probably the best season.
Yeah.
But absolutely, I think that this, if you can, if like, because some of the cliche elements like of it really are great. Like if you can just bring a little bit of nuance, bring a little bit of, I don't know, storyline, character development to it. And still, I think you can still make it as cliche as you want to, because the it's cliche for a reason. Like the plot and the storyline, a lot of the things are within it are very real. I'm with you though. I would watch a modern day version of this for sure.
You could have even more players than just Alvin Mack talking about, hey, we deserve to get paid. That would be a bigger storyline. It would be nice to see the head coach actually have to deal with some realistic discipline and actually have to combat what happens when a player on your team does something horrible, like try to rape a booster's daughter, and then you suspend him for 3 games because of his steroid use, which is, tough. And acknowledge more like have winners be less on this line of not caring, and either have him be this powerful coach figure, this Saban, or this, like, who is a coach in your mind who, like, who needs it this year?
Who needs to win this year?
Who needs to win this year?
I'd say Will Muschamp is one. You know,
yeah, have him be Will Muschamp. Yeah. That would be perfect. Actually, sign me up.
I'd love to watch a Will Muschamp show. Yeah.
I would kill for that.
Yeah, no, it's I think I'm with you. I think a better head coach with more realistic interaction with this team, cut out the relationships, and I'm on board.
More recruiting, because that's my favorite part of blue chips. Like, a basketball recruiting class is different, but in blue chips you get invested in the players and invested in Nick Nolte's head coach carry at the same time. You see what he's got to do to get him to campus. You get invested in Shaq and Penny all over again. I would love something like that. But who knows if we'll get a remake of this one. The original's pretty interesting. Barton, thanks so much for coming on the pod talking about it. Tell the folks again where they can find you, where they can find your podcast and your work.
Yeah, anywhere you look for podcasts, Barton and Bud, Cover 3 Podcast, 24/7 Sports. We're all out there. We're trying to keep you updated with the football stuff. Not all bad news. We're talking sports too. So appreciate you having me on, man. This was fun.
Of course, you guys do one of my favorite podcasts. Everyone go check that out. If you enjoy this episode of Big Screen Sports, please remember subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, review, you guys know the drill. New episodes every Monday. Also, for any baseball fans out there, check out my interview series From Phenom to the Farm presented by Baseball America. That comes at you every other Tuesday, talking to current and former Major League players about their experience going through the minors. Next Tuesday's episode is with former Big League pitcher Carter Capps. And until then, we'll see you next Monday. Thanks for listening.